that honors Emmett Till and your aunt, Mamie Till Mobley, Emmett's Bobo's mother. Thank you so much for being with us. That does it for our show. A very happy birthday to Rob Young. You can see transcripts of all of our shows and also get video and audio podcasts at democracynow.org, as well as sign up for our daily news digest at democracynow.org. Or you can text the word Democracy Now, one word, to 66866, and that'll sign you right up. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for interns in our archive and development departments. Learn more at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
KABU Community Radio is conducting a survey, and we want to hear from you. Your valuable feedback about KABU will help shape the types of public affairs, news, and music programming we bring you and our community in the years ahead. We're also interested in how you listen to KABU, and we'll use this feedback to help serve you better. The survey is anonymous, however, you will have an opportunity to provide your contact information to enter a drawing. 10 lucky winners will receive a $50 gift card. The survey is open now, and the deadline to participate has been extended to Sunday, July 30th. Go to our website at kboo.fm/survey23. kboo.fm/survey23. Thank you in advance for your time and your feedback. Stay tuned for KABU's next strategic plan coming soon.
KABU Community Radio is hiring a full-time development director. This position leads all fundraising campaigns in alignment with KABU's mission, goals, and policies. The development director works closely with management and staff to identify funding priorities and create major donor campaigns, capital campaigns, and grant writing. More info can be found at kabu.fm/hiring. We will begin reviewing applications on August 7th, and the position will remain open until filled. KABU is an equal opportunity employer.
This is KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM. Up next, we have the KABU Evening News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KABU Evening News.
Coming up in the KABU Evening News, Oregonians will be able to pump their own gas as soon as next week.
Governor Tina Kotek indicates which bills and budget items she'll veto.
And local organizations rally against free trade talks in Seattle.
Good evening. This is the KABU Evening News for Friday, July 28th, 2023. I'm Ken Jones.
And I'm Reed Johnson. Oregon is getting a little less unique, with Oregonians being able to pump their own gas starting next week. State lawmakers passed a bill to end the ban on self-serve gas, and Governor Tina Kotek says she won't veto it. It's not clear yet if she'll sign the bill or simply allow it to go into effect by the deadline of August 4th. Until now, Oregon was one of only two states in the nation that didn't allow drivers to pump their own gas. The new law means that gas stations who decide to offer self-service will still have to have full service available on half their pumps. Gas stations also can't offer self-service gas without providing full service at the same time, like overnight, for example. They also can't charge more for self-service or attendant service. The rules are different in certain rural counties where overnight self-service was legalized in 2015 and updated in 2017. Self-service gas has been a contentious issue for Oregonians. Governor Kotek said in a press conference yesterday that her office received over 5,000 emails about the law. Some feared that it would cost Oregonians their jobs and pose extra difficulties for people with disabilities at the pump. Station owners supported the bill, saying they're already having trouble finding people who want to be attendants. Oregonians can look for self-serve gas at their local station as early as next weekend.
Oregon Governor Tina Kotek considers vetoing several bills and budget items from the 2023 legislative session. Kotek must decide by August 4th which bills she will veto, otherwise they go into effect. The frantic pace at the end of legislative session meant a lot of bills passed in a very condensed amount of time after Republican lawmakers returned from their prolonged walkout. Perhaps most notably, Kotek indicates she will veto funding for studying the impact of decriminalizing sex work. The budget set aside $600,000 for two different studies at OHSU and the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission. In her notice, Kotek writes, quote, "While there is value to this study, especially as it relates to understanding disproportionate impacts on communities of color, the governor believes it can and should be privately funded." She also will potentially veto budget items to fund a study of building a streetcar in Salem and funding the Willamette Career Academy. Kotek also announced a veto possibility for a few policy bills. One is HB 2079, which assigns the legislative revenue officer to study a tax credit for preserving historic property. The other is HB 2763, which would create a state public bank task force to make recommendations about establishing a state public bank. Kotek may also veto the emergency clause of SB 1095, which adjusts the membership of certain boards and commissions now that there's a sixth congressional district in Oregon. This would extend the implementation time, according to Kotek, so more time for recruiting and training members. The deadline for Kotek to either sign or veto the bills passed in the Oregon legislature is August 4th.
Portland Street Response's first manager left her position in early July, and new reporting from OPB uncovers why. A public records disclosure of Robin Burek's exit interview revealed that she left after 3 years due to a lack of support and poor transparency by the Fire Bureau's top brass. Portland Street Response, or PSR, has shown success in the past year, lightening police workloads and keeping hundreds of people in crisis out of jail beds and hospital emergency departments. However, Burek said that the Fire Bureau's leadership didn't give much-needed support to ensure the continued success of the program. In fact, according to a recent Portland State University report, there were frequent clashes between firefighters and Portland Street Response staff. Burek even proposed relocating the department to another division. This suggestion was not accepted by Renee Gonzalez, the new city commissioner of public safety. In fact, Gonzalez froze the program's purchases in February this year, stopping PSR from providing 24-hour service and buying food and warm clothes. He also informed PSR that they can no longer hand out tents and tarps to homeless Portlanders. The freeze was lifted at the end of June, but impacted PSR's momentum significantly. These factors, plus change in leadership at the Fire Bureau, led Burek to resign. She said, quote, "I care a lot about this program, but I also believe there's a benefit to handing the program over to someone with fresh eyes, vision, and hope," end quote. Since her absence, over 10,000 people have signed a petition created by 40 organizations urging Portland city leaders to keep PSR from shutting down and for it to become a permanent and fully funded program. Gonzalez has yet to comment on the petition.
Two dozen Portlanders dropped banners over the I-84 bridge yesterday, condemning the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation, or APEC, meeting starting this weekend in Seattle. Their signs read, APEC out of the PNW and People Over Profit. APEC is an alliance of 21 member economies in the Asia-Pacific region. Their purpose is to invigorate economic activity and expand free trade between the members. At the upcoming meeting in Seattle, APEC will discuss a free trade agreement called the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework for Prosperity, or IPEF. Here are some sounds from the I-84 overpass on Thursday.
Shut down APEC!
Shut down APEC!
Shut down APEC!
No to 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 IPEF!
No to IPEF!
No to IPEF!
Protesters expressed concerns about how the free trade agreement targets women and about trade deals in the energy sector. One of those deals involves NuScale, a nuclear power company built in Tigard that wants to invest in the Philippines. Cody Urban is a member of the PNW People Over Profit Coalition, a group attending the Seattle People Summit against APEC. Urban said, quote, "Wherever APEC goes, the people fight back. Not too long ago, over 100,000 mobilized to protest the World Trade Organization and their free trade agreement meetings. Now APEC is here in our backyard, and we have to expose their real agenda of exploitation and profit-making.
Trade negotiations among the U.S. and countries that represent 40% of world GDP are happening on Sunday in Seattle. Opponents say the meetings are happening without public scrutiny, and KBOO's Grant Button has the details.
Global trade negotiations are happening this weekend in Seattle, and critics say the process should come out from behind closed doors. Meetings for Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation are taking place Sunday in Seattle, with the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework trade negotiations at its center. Head of the Washington Fair Trade Coalition, Julia Buona, says her organization and other groups in the region are delivering more than 10,000 petition signatures calling for increased transparency of the trade talks. Buona says corporations dominate talks like this away from public scrutiny.
If we're ever going to deliver on the promise of a new worker-centered, climate-friendly trade model, people need to know what's being proposed in these paths while there's still an opportunity to influence the rules being written.
The Indo-Pacific Economic Framework includes a dozen countries, including India, Japan, South Korea, and Vietnam, and represent 40% of world GDP. The Biden administration says the deal will make supply chains more resilient, protecting against, quote, costly disruptions that lead to higher prices for consumers, end quote. Buona says big technology companies could play an outsized role because of their access to the talks.
What we're really worried about is that these big tech companies will essentially rig trade deals, putting in clauses that will undermine consumer privacy, data security, AI accountability, and anti-monopoly rules.
Buona says the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework could have the same effect as other trade deals, in which jobs are shipped from the U.S. to other parts of the world.
That means workers here are losing good union-paying jobs and workers abroad are continuing to be exploited and oppressed, working under really hazardous working conditions for very little pay, no right to unionize.
Critics of the deal are gathering at 2 p.m. at Cal Anderson Park on Sunday. From there, they'll march to the Seattle Convention Center, where the meetings are being held. For KBOO News and the Public News Service, I'm Grant Bunn.
House Democrats reintroduce the Protect Our Democracy Act, committees talk gender-affirming care for minors, and President Biden takes action on extreme heat. With more on the story, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Over the last several years, we've seen our democracy put to the test. From the 2020 election to the violent assault on the nation's capital, protecting our democracy is critical to safeguard our government from both foreign and domestic bad actors.
California Representative Adam Schiff announced the reintroduction of the Protecting Our Democracy Act, which has support from more than 100 House Democrats. The bill was originally introduced in 2021. It prohibits presidential self-pardons, increases whistleblower protections, and requires federal campaigns to report foreign contacts. This comes as more than half of adults feel American democracy isn't working well, with only 9% thinking otherwise, according to an Associated Press NORC poll. Meanwhile, people who are both for and against gender-affirming care for minors testified before the House Subcommittee on Constitution and Limited Government. Numerous states implemented bans on such care, although some have been blocked in the courts. Chloe Cole is an activist against gender-affirming care for minors who describes herself as a formerly trans kid, having transitioned from female to male at age 12. She later discontinued this care at age 17 and describes her experience after undergoing a mastectomy at 15.
There is nothing wrong with my still developing body or my breasts. Other than that, as an insecure teenage girl, I felt awkward about it. After my breasts were taken away from me, the tissue was incinerated. Before I was able to legally drive, I had a huge part of my future womanhood taken from me. I will never be able to breastfeed. I struggle to look at myself in the mirror at times.
As the 2024 election nears, betting on congressional races is being debated, and one group is worried. The Commodity Futures Trading Commission has been asked by trading platform Kalshi to allow these bets via event contracts. This limits betting on which party controls Congress in future elections. In 2022, Kalshi sought CFTC approval for bets to be placed on the midterms, but withdrew the proposal after staff concerns. But Stephen Spaulding with Common Cause says big spenders could sway the process in massive ways.
You can imagine a situation where a entity that is now able to spend money on elections post-Citizens United then places an enormous wager on the outcome of an election and also funnels resources through super PACs or other dark money vehicles to influence the outcome of an election.
With temperatures reaching extreme highs across the country this week, elected officials have been taking strides to help people deal with this extreme heat. Scientists have found this July is likely to be the hottest month on record. A Duke University study finds excessive heat has caused as many as 12,000 deaths per year. President Joe Biden describes what's being done at the federal level to help workers beat the heat.
I've asked Acting Labor Secretary Julie Hsu to issue a heat hazard alert. It clarifies that workers have federal heat-related protections. We should be protecting workers from hazardous conditions, and we will.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sona Lee. Then at 7 p.m., Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will be clear with wind gusts up to 11 miles per hour and an overnight low of 57 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be sunny and warm, the high of 82. Today in history, in 1996, the remains of a prehistoric Paleo-American man was found in Kennewick, Washington, and so named the Kennewick Man, or Ancient One. It's one of the oldest skeletons ever found. Tests indicate the skeleton was around 9,000 years old. After the discovery, there was a decade of court battles over the remains, ultimately culminating in a 2017 reburial by a coalition of Columbia Basin tribes, who were found to be descended from close relatives of Kennewick Man. The quote of the day is from American cartoonist and creator of Garfield, Jim Davis, born today in 1945. He said, quote, "Way down deep, we're all motivated by the same urges. Cats have the courage to live by them."
The federal government is setting aside $120 million for tribes to build their climate resilience projects. But some say it might not be enough. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Biden administration has carved out $120 million for tribal communities across the nation to adapt to climate change. It's part of $440 million set aside for tribes from the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act and other federal spending. The administration says it's the largest amount of climate change funds for tribes in the history of the Bureau of Indian Affairs. But as KMBA's Rhonda McBride reports, that money won't go very far.
As director of the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium's Climate Change Initiative, Jackie Schaefer travels to places like Kivalina, which are being swallowed up by the ocean. She says this latest round of funding won't even cover half of what it'll take to move the community.
Even a water system, an average water system, is $70 to $100 million for a community that size. So when you look at that, then you start adding those costs. It really is. It's expensive to build a whole new community.
Schaefer says there are many other tribes in Alaska which face the same challenges and must completely rebuild their communities because their homes are too old to be moved. While Schaefer says she's grateful for the funding, she calls it a drop in a huge bucket of needs, money that has to be shared with tribes across the country. In a statement, the Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs, Brian Newland, calls it a historic investment which gives tribes the resources they need to develop and implement protective strategies for their communities. Newland says tribes should look at this first $120 million as a down payment for more help once needs are identified and prioritized. Schaefer says all of this is good to hear, but wonders if the federal government has yet to grasp the true cost of climate change.
Our people, because they're so connected to the land, air, and sea, when they see things wash away that connects them to their ancestry, it's devastating.
Realities, Schaefer says, that are hard to truly grasp in both cost and magnitude unless they're at your doorstep. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
As the U.S. Mint continues its American Women Quarters program, one of the new faces to enter circulation is Indigenous. Zikala Shaw, a Yankton Sioux political activist, writer, and musician, is one of five historic women to be part of the program. It includes Maya Angelou and Eleanor Roosevelt, the likeness of Zikala Shaw, who wrote the first American Indian opera in 1913, will be minted on 600 million quarters for 10 weeks in 2024 before being discontinued. Joining her in this year's set, designed to highlight notable women in history, are Polly Murray, Patsy Mink, Mary Edwards Walker, and Cecilia Cruz. The Shakopee Mittawakaton Sioux community announced Thursday it will reintroduce bison on tribal lands in Shakopee, Minnesota. Dakota people consider bison a relative, and the tribe has been planning to bring them back. This fall, the tribe plans to welcome a small herd of up to 15 bison from Sisseton Wahpeton Oyate in South Dakota. Chairman Keith Anderson says the tribe has restored and revitalized its relationship with plants over the decades and now has the opportunity to revitalize the relationship with bison, which will allow the tribe to bring back traditional ceremonies, food, and medicine to his people. The tribe's Land and Natural Resources Department is overseeing the process and learning from other tribes and organizations, which have successfully reintroduced bison. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The U.S. women's national team ties with Netherlands at the World Cup. Bengals quarterback Joe Burrow gets injured, and baseball player Shohei Ohtani continues his MVP chase. For more, we go to KBOO Sports News Edition. KBOO's own Grant Button is on the sports beat, and in the midst of the hottest month on record, diving into this week's most sizzling stories.
The U.S. women's national soccer team tied with the Netherlands at the World Cup on Thursday, 1-1. With the draw, the U.S. team extends their unbeaten streak to 19 games at the World Cup, a dominant stretch featuring two back-to-back World Cup wins over the last two tournaments. In the 17th minute, midfielder Jill Ward for the Netherlands scored a goal, leaving the U.S. trailing for the first time since 2011. However, in the 62nd minute, U.S. captain Lindsey Horan scored the equalizer with a perfectly placed header. Amazingly, just minutes earlier, Horan had been hip-checked by a Netherlands player and appeared significantly injured on the play. However, after the medical staff took a look at her, Horan stood up without help and slightly limped back on the field, briefly getting into an argument with the Netherlands player. For Team USA, this was a blessing as minutes later she scored. She said, quote, "I don't think you ever want to get me mad because I don't react in a good way," end quote. In Ohio, Cincinnati Bengals fans got quite the scare when star quarterback Joe Burrow limped off the field and fell down during Thursday's practice during what appeared to be a non-contact related calf injury. Zach Taylor, the Cincinnati Bengals head coach, told reporters Friday that he expects Burrow to be sidelined for, quote, several weeks, end quote. This is a third straight training camp injury that Joe Burrow has had to deal with, a real concern moving forward. If Burrow is unable to play in their season opener on September 10th, the Bengals have Trevor Siemian and Jake Browning on their QB depth chart. Moving to baseball, the Los Angeles Angels superstar Shohei Ohtani pitched a one-hit shutout, pitching 111 times through 9 innings. This is the first shutout of his career and included 8 strikeouts, resulting in a 6-0 Angels victory. However, Ohtani's night was far from over, as just over an hour later, he hit a 2-run home run bomb in the second game of the Angels-Tigers doubleheader. And if that wasn't great enough, he went ahead and hit another homer in the fourth inning for his MLB-leading 38th homer of the year. This puts him comfortably in the home run lead, as the next most has only 32. For KBOO Sports News, I'm Grant Buck.
Astronomers recently found an exoplanet that reflects 80% of the light shown on it by its host star named LTT9779b. For comparison, Earth only reflects around 30% of incoming light. It's extremely reflective because of the metallic clouds that cover it, made up of silicate and mixed metals like titanium. The exoplanet is around the size of Neptune and has a radius 4.7 times bigger than that of Earth. It's located 262 light-years away. LTT9779b is very close to its star, making the exoplanet's star-facing temperature around 3,600 degrees Fahrenheit. James Jenkins, an astronomer at Diego Portales University, described the planet in vivid detail. He said, quote, imagine a burning world close to its star with heavy clouds of metals floating aloft, raining down titanium droplets. Scientists had trouble explaining how clouds were able to form, since the part of the exoplanet that faces its star is so extremely hot. They realized that the atmosphere of LTT-9779b is so oversaturated with silicate and metal vapors that the air simply cannot hold anymore, resulting in the formation of clouds. The exoplanet has other unusual characteristics, too. For example, 1 year on LTT-9779b takes just 19 hours. Planets that revolve around their sun in less than one Earth day are usually gas giants much larger than Earth or rocky planets much smaller than Earth. Further research is likely to be done with both the Hubble and James Webb telescopes in order to learn more about this exoplanet.
The Endangered Species Act turns 50 this year. Murals across the country, including in Oregon, are celebrating its successes and continuing power to protect wildlife. Eric Tagedoff has the details.
Murals across the country are celebrating 50 years of the Endangered Species Act, including in Oregon. Congress passed the legislation in 1973 to protect wildlife from extinction. 5 decades on, Allie Fisher with Oregon Wild says the law continues to do that. She says the climate crisis gets a lot of attention, but the globe is also experiencing a biodiversity crisis.
This mural is really significant. It is really showing our commitment to defending the Endangered Species Act and taking a stand against extinction.
The Endangered Species Act has helped save 99% of listed species, according to the Interior Department. The Endangered Species Coalition is hosting the National Mural Project for the Act. The mural in Oregon is in Portland's Pearl District and opens on Thursday. Oregon Wild partnered with the Portland Street Art Alliance and artist Jeremy Nichols for the mural. Head of the Portland Street Art Alliance, Tiffany Conklin, describes the species in it.
Some of the animals included are the gray wolf, the northern spotted owl, the coho salmon, western painted turtle, monarch butterfly, and some of our beautiful flora that we have here in the Northwest.
Fisher says bills in Congress threaten to weaken the Endangered Species Act. However, the act has many success stories, including the California condor, which is also native to Oregon. She says at one point in time there were only 22 left, but today there are more than 500.
Just goes to show that when we are actually investing in bringing back species, we have the power to do that, which is why the Endangered Species Act has been such an amazing tool.
For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Civic engagement organizations have been sounding the alarm over threats to democracy, like false claims about voter fraud and the ripple effects they create. But some are now warning about a new threat, efforts to legalize gambling on election outcomes. KBOO's Grant Button has more.
Almost a year before the 2024 election, the question of whether bets should be allowed on congressional races is being debated. The idea has civic engagement groups worried. A little-known government agency is playing a key role in deciding whether gambling and elections should mix. The Commodity Futures Trading Commission has been asked by the trading platform Kalshi to allow such bets through so-called event contracts. They'd be limited to betting on which party will control Congress in future elections. But Stephen Spalding of the group Common Cause says this will put even more pressure on the health of democracy in current political environment.
This opens up a significant risk to the perception that the winners and losers of an election are not determined by voters, but by those who stand to gain financially.
Common Cause has sent a filing to the commission asking that it reject the proposal. Leadership with the House Task Force on Strengthening Democracy issued a similar request. Wisconsin Representative Mark Polkin is on the task force but declined comment. Supporters of the idea say the forecasting could help small businesses protect their interests while benefiting researchers. But Spalding says the world of politics is still reeling from the 2010 Citizens United ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court. He says when you add gambling to the equation, big spenders could hold sway over the process in an even bigger way.
You can imagine a situation where a entity that is now able to spend money on elections, post-Citizens United, then places an enormous wager on the outcome of an election and also funnels resources through super PACs or other dark money vehicles to influence the outcome of an election.
Last year, Kalshi sought CFTC approval for bets to be placed on the 2022 midterms. but it ultimately withdrew its plan when commission staff raised concerns and recommended rejecting the proposal. For KBOO News and the Public News Service, I'm Grant Button.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, July 28th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories, tips, and effusive praise for station anchors at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Grant Button. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Laura Miller. Special thanks to Eric Tagadoff, Antonia Gonzalez, Edwin J. Vieira, and Lonnie Felicitas. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220H Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Reed Johnson.
And I'm Ken Jones.
All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, listeners may have heard that Texas Governor Greg Abbott has installed barrels wrapped in razor wire in some parts of the Rio Grande to block migrants from crossing and harm those that try. As revealed by the Houston Chronicle, Texas troopers have been ordered to push people back